the Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast. All right, welcome to the show. Before we get started, I want you to please like and subscribe because this is how we grow our podcast. Thank you for watching and just being a part of this. So I appreciate that. Today's guest is Shane Colson. He's been with Fund Loans for 6 years and is our number one account executive over here. He's an expert at all aspects of non-QM and has been a strong leader in our team. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you. I think we did this like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And you were probably like number 8 or 10 guests to the podcast. And now we're at like 98 episodes. So
wild.
Almost to 100, but glad to have you back and kind of hear how your journey's been going and
yeah, definitely.
How you've made it to be stay at the top every month, month after month. I know you've had a couple months where others kind of beat you, but overall you've been the number one AE here. So it's definitely something you're doing right.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Cool. Like, just give us some background on you, because I know you didn't, you weren't born into the mortgage industry. You started somewhere else. And go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of a. I mean, it's been a journey. Started in hospitality.
Cool.
I feel like, you know, you hear that story a lot in our industry, which is kind of cool. You get to like.
Yeah, a lot of people start out as like a waiter, you know, something, right? And then you're in college and you're doing that kind of job, and then you like, you know, working with people, and then sort of that translates into a kind of a job that's, you know, people related, which whatever it is, real estate or
Keep going. Yeah, so I started out at the Four Seasons up here in San Diego, Aviara, and kind of I worked through the ranks and got into management. Moved around the country a little bit, moved up to like Whistler, Seattle, San Francisco. San Francisco is kind of where I ended up on my last hitch. And I dug it. It was really fast paced. It was very, you know, customer service oriented, obviously. You're interacting with people, you know, in the management role, you had your crew that you're managing. So you're like a leader to them and kind of, I don't know if you've seen like that, that show, The Bear,
that's
been out lately.
Oh, okay. No.
But anyways,
like Cocaine Bear, right?
No, not that. No.
But before you go into that, like Four Seasons has a rigorous training program, right? Like they are like, it's almost like not a cult, but it's like the way that they train you to treat customers is super gnarly. I know my wife worked at Four Seasons for a while, so she always comes back to that. So tell us real quick about kind of that.
It was almost like the military, like 2 full weeks. I started, I think, in 06. And it was 2 full weeks of just like classroom training. And then before you even got to the floor, history about the company, you know, the golden rule, there was a sequence of service. There was like a guideline manual so that every single aspect of the experience had like an expectation. So it was pretty cool. You definitely, you know, you're never allowed to say no. You always have to offer options. There was, you know, a certain phone etiquette that you had to always adhere to. There was just every aspect of the guest experience from the time that they either walked in your restaurant or checked into the hotel, depending on like what department you were in. It was just to the T. And that's why, I mean, I'm sure you've stayed at a Four Seasons. Yeah. It's like, that's why the experience is good.
I feel like I've been lucky enough to stay at Four Seasons and I tell you, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The way that you feel like you're a king or you're just treated so well.
And
I mean that whatever they've done to do that is, you know, has been, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, you go through your training there, then you go through, you know, your specific training in your department. And you're always supervised for that, like that first month. You always like have like your partner or whatever. It was awesome to see. And coming from other service industry jobs where it was just kind of like, you know, put them out there. Let's see what happens. So I've to this day, I still reference back and, you know, use things from those days.
That's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So like, would you say by being it like fund loans or being in the mortgage industry, you've benefited from that training?
Yeah, definitely.
Like the way you treat your brokers and stuff like that.
100%. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, and our company, how we operate with our underwriting is just like that. I would say like 99.9% of the time, we never say no. We always give some sort of option.
A pivot, like a counter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's always going to be something that we can do, or, you know, maybe we hit the rate because it's an exception. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
That's good. So. Yeah. Well, how do you think that like's translated into, you know, the hospitality? Like for you, what do you think that's contributed to your success besides just like being, you know, always like available for your brokers? But like, what kind of specific things stand out that you've taken from like the Four Seasons?
Yeah. Too? I mean, so just right off the bat, guidelines, right? They have like a manual, a set of guidelines and standards. Yeah. For every experience, whether it's dining or, you know, the room service or just the room itself, if you're in housekeeping or whatever. So we have guidelines, mm-hmm. and it's like, it was very similar. You knew like, so like in the restaurant industry, you had a certain amount of time to like approach a table to greet them, or you had a certain amount of time before they were sat, like guests were never allowed to wait more than like 90 seconds or whatever it may be.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, some of the same things for me, like I always like, I kind of prioritize my email and kind of my responses based on what, you know, what it is like pricing, put it at the top of the list, like never more than like 15 minutes sitting in an email like that. I know that that is like super important to them. They just got off the phone.
Right.
Or someone just left their office or whatever it may be. So that's like really important. When an approval comes out, always, as soon as that approval comes out, I'm reading it. They're calling me, mm-hmm. right? They're going to call me.
You got to know
in the next 5 minutes. Yeah.
You got to be in the know.
So always reading the approval. And then also I think that there was this, in the Four Seasons, there was this kind of like anticipating guests' needs.
Yep.
Part of the sequence of service. If someone offered up, you know, like if they didn't want to put their last name on the reservation, let's say, and they offered up their name, or they were telling you that they're going to go see a movie or like some little, mm-hmm. maybe you could tie it in and surprise them. Mm. And so same thing with this industry, we can, there's opportunities, like someone could bring in a file and you see that it's full doc. And you know that they're going to have some issues with the DTI. You know, maybe the co-borrower doesn't have like the best mortgage history or something like that. And you're like, hey, we could, this is only an eighth hire. Maybe let's look at this program. Mm. Let's look at DSCR.
Kind of give them a better experience.
Yeah. And just anticipate.
Make sure the deal's going to go up.
And not like coach them, you know, like I'm not saying like put them into a program, but just kind of like, hey, are they open to this? Is this
right?
Is speed of the transaction the, you know,
yeah, most what's important the need? Thing?
Yeah. Is good. The most cash out? Is it, you know, the rate? If it's the rate, then yeah, we'll go through the steps and do it full doc or whatever.
That's good. So then how did you get from there to being an AE? Because I know, like, I remember when you came in 6 years ago, pretty much, you weren't an AE. You were, I think, in the disclosure department, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you kind of, like, got in and then... Like, were you always wanting to be in sales or like?
So it's kind of interesting. So I left the Four Seasons and it was like a moment that I had. I was living in San Francisco. I had like a little studio apartment right in the Tenderloin, walking to work every day. And I just like woke up and I was just like, I hadn't been to any family events or any like weekend or holiday like get togethers in like 8 years. I was with them like 8 years. Yeah,
that comes with that kind of job.
Yeah. Right? Working weekend nights. My favorite was the clopin, right? Close and then open the next day at 6 a.m. or whatever to get in the 4 hours.
Clopin, I never heard of that.
Yeah, it was rough, right? Yeah. So, and so I have a lot of respect for people that make careers out of those, you know, out of that and stay in that industry because of that. Fast forward, I left the company, moved back to San Diego. And basically got an insurance job. I was a licensed sales professional for Allstate.
Cool.
and it was polar opposite. It was like going like 120 miles an hour down to like 30 and like doing circles slowly through your neighborhood. Like that's how it felt compared to like driving a race car. So I wasn't making that great of money. It was kind of a step down in money, and it was just like a different time in my life where I knew that I didn't want to be, you know, in hospitality forever. I just knew it in my soul.
Yeah.
And but I wasn't making great money, so I got a second job. I actually worked two jobs. So I was working banquets for a hotel because it was like comfortable, what I knew. It was more flex for me, so it like worked out. And the captain, kind of the manager, his wife happened to be in HR for a certain company.
Fun love.
And he's like, you'd be really good. You should like go apply.
Yeah,
go apply, go try. I was like, man, I don't, you know, I know a lot about insurance. I know a lot about hospitality, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was nervous. So anyway, came in, interviewed with the processing. It was a intake processor job. Interviewed with the processing manager. Went through a couple other interviews, and I think I interviewed with you as well. The final interview, And y'all gave me a shot, and started in processing, which was great for, I mean, for where...
Kind of good way to learn.
I was in the beginning, intake processing was doc collecting, grabbing IDs, tax information, assets. And so you learned really quickly, not only just the mortgage language, but you learned on the retail side, like what it's like to originate the loan, what it's like to upload to a portal, like really what, you know, the client facing side was like. So that was awesome. Started learning disclosures. And then it was the craziest thing. Our chief lending officer, David, came to me one day and he was like, "Hey, people really like you. Like you should, you know, like people like you, you light up around people and like, you interact well, like you should come over to the sales side." And it's like, I don't know. Those guys, you know, at the time,
commission only.
Yeah. And I was commission only. It was just like a completely different lifestyle. And, the AEs were just always on the phone having really heavy conversations. I was just
like, that's intense, dude. I don't know about that. Yeah.
So it was definitely kind of a leap of faith. I'll never forget. David was like, "You can have your processing job back. Your job is safe here. Like if you ever want to
go come right back, yeah,
yeah." And so that was like 6 months in or so, and then it kind of took off. Like basically, I had a slow start. I'd say like 3 or 4 months of building up my confidence and talking with brokers and getting scenarios and getting comfortable on the phone, and then I funded like, I don't know, it was like 6 million. It was like 5.5 or 6 million in a month, like month four, let's say.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I knew it was like a hit of adrenaline. Like I was just like,
you tasted the good life.
I was in. Yes. And it was so cool because the first couple files I had, obviously we do non-chem, so none of them are going to be easy.
Right.
But, the first couple files I had really had some like moving pieces. It was like a salon owner, a construction company owner, and like a had like a almost like a rehab or like assisted living facilities that he owned. And anyway, I'll never forget because it was just they're burned in my mind.
You're like, people are complicated.
Yeah, complicated. Yeah. And like, but it was cool. It was such a cool feeling. One of the files was like a new build, and just seeing the appraisal, and then had to get the certificate of occupancy and 1004D, and like learning that whole process. It was just,
there's awesome. So much to know, especially when you're writing the business. You're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want to close this thing. And your broker does too. And you're just like figuring it out along the way. But I mean, I think you know, the next question I was going to ask you is about like, what do you think of non-QM? And I know that you've never done Fannie, Freddie, Govy, any other type of lending. So, I mean, in my opinion, cause I've done it all like in my million years in the career. And I was always bored to death by the Fannie Freddie stuff, the W-2, just the, you know, and whatever their basic job was, and they had, you know, it was just all these little boxes, and I never was a box person, you know, I was like, always was like a creative person. So when I came across Non-QM earlier on was like subprime, but more like alt doc type of loans and super jumbo loans. And, but I always, that's the part of lending I liked. I didn't ever like the other stuff. So you never had a chance to taste the boring vanilla. But tell us, like, what are your favorite parts of Non-QM?
Yeah, I think like being the person to rescue something or like rescue a file, I think is like the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I can't even count how many times I have, you know, appraisals transferred in, you know, like, hey, this thing, we're like 2.5 weeks in and we have a notice to perform and like, and delivering. It's like the coolest feeling.
It's rewarding, right?
Yeah, it's rewarding.
I think the other side's a thankless job, and I think this side's at least more rewarding, more gratitude from people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. You save the day. So let's say that it's just like an agency fallout. You're able to do it bank statement. Make the deadline, or maybe they got an extension or something like that. It was just, it's the coolest feeling just knowing that you got them into that house. They got the keys, or they got the cash that they needed for the investment that they have lined up or whatever. It's very satisfying. And then also, just knowing like the impact that you have on the relationships between the brokers and their either referral sources or the real estate agent or whoever, like, you know, that is so valuable to, like, hey, we had to switch gears mid transaction.
Yeah.
And, you know, so-and-so Mr. Broker got it done for me. Like, knowing that I like did them a solid too.
Yeah. That's cool.
Such a good feeling.
So you were talking about how like the hospitality stuff really helped kind of probably like give you that base for your career on how to be great with customer service and all that stuff. But like, let's talk about success, because being consistently the top AE is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, you have been in this industry less than most AEs, I would say, that are out there in the world. I mean, you know, a lot of AEs that I know have been doing it since I was in the business, you know, so 27 years. And they're still in the business. They're still AEs, right? Like, they haven't left the business. You've been in the business six years, but you've been consistently the top. Like, what things can you share with the audience on that really have, you think, have contributed towards that
success? Yeah, I mean, for me, I think, I mean, you've heard of the law of attraction, or like the secret, or however, you know.
Yep, she's a secret. I guess we could share it on here, but, you know, don't tell anyone.
So I'm a huge fan of it. I found that book when I was younger, mm-hmm. and it's stuck with me. And so I think that is huge. And also, I use this analogy a lot with like my friends or family, and like when things aren't going as well as they want or whatever, is that everything happens for a reason, and the proof is that it did, right? Like, it happened that way,
right?
And that's why it's supposed to. In addition to that, I think that everything is like, it's almost like a seed being planted. Like, if you're like, I'm going to be the best AE, you have to plant that seed, mm-hmm. water it, nurture it, has to be the right temperature, whatever. Starts to grow, and you may not even see it growing until it crosses the surface.
Right.
And so you have to, there's a certain level of like faith that you have to have, and just
belief and
you have to see it.
Hope.
And,
all those things. Yeah.
You have to believe in it. And so that to me is a huge part of it for me. That's, you know, that like not only just like believing in, so, you know, like
I'm gonna, I believe I'm going to be rich. I believe I'm going to be rich. It's not that, right?
I'm going to have the highest followers on Instagram. And then all of a sudden, it's not that simple. But it's truly like, you know, living your day-to-day, and it's almost like the micro decisions that you make all like become the sum total of like all of those little decisions.
Yeah, it's good.
So I think that's to me, a lot of it. And a lot of people kind of turn back at like the first sign of adversity, right? Like, you I have a like a analogy, I guess you want to say. Like if you're going to the grocery store, everybody on the planet pretty much has gone to the grocery store. They got, you get in your car and you go down the street, and let's say it's like a couple miles away and you hit the first stop sign. Like nobody.
Stop. Oh shit. There's a stop sign. I'm going back home.
Nobody turns around. Right. Everybody goes, oh, I'm going to stop. Maybe there's a dog that walks in front of them, you know, or a person. Yeah. And then they go, and then maybe they hit a stoplight, and nobody turns around and says, oh, no, you know, like, this is it. I'm not going to the store today. It's just too much. And so
you get a flat tire.
Yeah. You get a flat tire, you get it fixed, and then you go to the store later.
You know, you still go to the store.
But you're still going to do it. So that's the way it is to me. It's like the goal is the grocery store, or actually coming home with the groceries would be the goal.
Yeah, I think you told me this before. You said something like, two eggs and carton of milk.
Right? Yeah.
Something like that. Like eggs, I'm going to the store to get some bread, eggs and milk.
Yes.
And nothing's going to stop you from doing that.
Right.
And that's such a simple request, or like in your mind, it's something so achievable that you're just, there's no question in your mind that you're going to do it.
Right.
Keep going.
Yeah. So it's that concept of I'm going to go no matter how many obstacles like present themselves in front of me. I get to the store, someone takes the parking spot that I'm going to get, so I have to park in another one that's further away. And then I get into the grocery store, my card's declined, and then I have to use a different credit card or whatever it may be.
Right.
I have to call and unfreeze the lock on my credit card. What, you figure it out, and then you bring home your milk, eggs, and bread.
So that, the way I see that is like you have to believe that whatever it is that you're going to achieve is as easy as going to the store and getting eggs and milk and bread.
And believable.
Believable. Like if you're saying like, I'm going to be the top producer, well, of course that's something everyone can achieve because people do it all the time and they become top producer. And, you know, maybe they have certain elements that make it easier for them. Maybe they're, you know, some people it's easier if they're really attractive or if they're one of those type of persons that can speak really well. And so they have this natural gift and ability to achieve that quicker, easier, but a lot of those people also don't have the same work ethic because things come so easy. So they haven't been pushed and trained and, you know, and they don't have that same resilience as other people who may not have things come so easy to them.
Absolutely.
You know,
you have to have the recipe.
Yeah.
And that is another thing that I think you, it's kind of like twofold. You have to believe in yourself. You have to like have this goal of going to the store and coming back with the goods, right? Like you have to think of it as simply as that, but also you have to have the recipe, the work ethic, the drive, the days that you don't want to get out of bed or whatever is going on in your personal life or even in your work life. Like there's tough files, people are yelling at you. You have, you know, things out of your control.
Right.
And being able to do that day after day. Or what I've also seen is like AEs that have a lot of success in 1 month and they just ride it out and take 3 months off. Like getting up after you have a monster month.
Yeah.
And going back and doing the exact same thing the first of the month that next month.
Yeah. Like
that takes a special
discipline.
Yeah. Somebody.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I
think that's important too.
I also think that like there, and maybe you have this because your upbringing or your mom or dad or whatever, but like there's something about, you know, the belief that you can do it is huge because, you know, and the way I sometimes look at it, and I've gone through massive ups and downs, like full on making on top of the world, making, you know, ton of money to being like just scrambling around for gift cards to see if I can take my wife on a date, like having no money, like going from these crazy things. And then like where, you know, you have to start over, maybe start a new I've had to start a new company, but like, I think that knowing that you are that person, like knowing that you are a top producer, not just saying like, even if you're not yet, right? But you know, like I am the type of person that is a top producer,
right?
And that's who I am in my identity.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's just a matter of time that separates you from being where you are today than to being the top producer. Cause you still are, you're still like, maybe think of like rock stars, like when they started out, like I think of Coldplay, I think of Chris Martin. He said in some video, like when he was, I think probably 20 years old, we're going to be the biggest band in the world we were going to sell out stadiums. He, like, in this kind of weird way, knew that he was that person that just time separated him. And then you look, you know, fast forward today, 10, 20, 30 years, I think it's been 20 years later, and they're just, they're the biggest band in the world. They're selling out arenas over and over. And, like,
they didn't give up.
He had this weird, and he called, some people call it a delusion, you know, but other people just, he knew, like, he just, that's who he was. And, you know, that's a special person. Obviously, there's only one Chris Martin, but I think you can take that on a way lower scale and say, I know that I'm the type of person that's going to do 5 million a month in volume, or I'm the type of person that I believe that I can do this much. And you just know it, and you just believe it, and you just, then you just keep working as what, you know, what would someone do? What do you have to do to be that person? And you just do it.
I love doing my goals and then working backwards. Like, I have funded over 100 million in non-QM.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what does that break down to a month? What is that?
How did I do it? Yeah.
Down almost, you can almost break it down to the minute. And it's just, it's really cool. And then you can, your actions start changing because you're like, person that makes 100 or that funded 100 million isn't going to be doing this.
Yeah.
Or what, you know, whatever may be that's in your life that's happening that you can start making those micro decisions that
absolutely
add up.
I mean, as easy as like saying, I'm the kind of person that has a six pack. I've never been that person. I've never had a six pack. Well, maybe when I was like 20, 19, 18, 17. But like, you know, like, I don't care about that. I mean, it's not like, you know, some people are like obsessed with that stuff, but like, it's as easy as that, being like, I'm a person that has a six pack. Well, you're not going to get one eating that pizza every night or like eating that, you know, hamburger every day. Exactly. You have to be that person. Right. Yes. And yeah, and anyone can have a six pack. It just takes fucking work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to wake up and like believe it, and
you have to want it, right?
Yeah,
because like, some people, you know, I like my food and my tequila and my wine. So what's your favorite loan program that we have?
Ooh, that is tough. I would say, so I'll use the names and then I'll describe it. So Apex and Spectrum, that's our bank statement alt doc program, and then our DSCR and no ratio. Mm-hmm. Apex being the bank statement, Spectrum being the DSCR no ratio. I'm like torn 50-50 on those, I would say.
So you like them both. That's good.
I like them both. Well, so for two different reasons. So Apex has the ability on the loans that you have to show ATR. So I kind of silo my book of business into like loans that are business purpose and loans that are, you know, you have to show ATR and follow TRID and you're in Dodd-Frank and everything.
Right.
So for those, Apex is like, no pun intended, like the top. Like that's
cool.
And then
is that because it goes higher and just because you just have more of that business or like?
No, I'm just saying, like, it gives you the most flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Loan amounts, doc type. It's just, I mean, if you're having to show the ability to repay, that casts the widest net on the type of borrower that you can fit into it.
Right.
You can do, you know, bank statement for self-employed plus add in assets. You can do bank statements for borrower one, you know, W-2s for borrower two. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's a lot.
Super flexible.
P&L only. Like, there's just a lot baked into that program. So that one, for my non-business purpose loans, that's the key. And then business purpose, Spectrum DSCRs definitely takes the cake. Those files are awesome to me. They're, you know, obviously made for real estate investors and professionals that know what they're doing. And a lot of times people are just floored by, you know, because we're outside of TRID, outside of Dodd-Frank. And so, you know, people can lend in states that they don't hold an NMLS. They can.
That's huge because a lot of people don't know
They don't know.
Yeah. They're like, I'm only licensed in California, so I can't do this deal in whatever, right?
Whatever I'm not state. Joking. I had a guy call me and handed me a Hawaii lead, and I was like, you can do that business purpose. It's totally cool. Like, I've done it before. Like,
what'd they say?
We've started up a file. But I'm just saying, like, he was like, ready to like hand it over to like another broker.
Yeah. He was ready to give it away.
Do you know anybody that can do that? I'm like, what's wrong with you, man?
He was stoked, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's really cool. So there's the flexibility on the licensing. There's the flexibility on being outside of TRID, meaning really you like no disclosures up until docs because it's outside of Dodd-Frank. So we send them as a courtesy, and I think that is important. And we have some other kind of things that we do throughout the file that kind of feel like a TRID loan.
Yep.
But I just think that that's super cool that we don't have to send a CD. You know, there's no 3-day wait. There's no...
It makes it so much faster, too.
Yeah.
So newsflash, brokers, if you're listening, if you only have a license in one or two states and you want to do a lot more business without getting those licenses, listen to what Shane's saying here. You can do... DSCR, how many states?
Oh, I mean, I don't know that off the top of my head. Like 20,
it's at least 20, right?
Yeah, 20-something
20 states. Other states. So like, if you don't know about this and you're struggling for business, like you got to get this knowledge in your brain to know.
Let me know. I'll send you the list. I have no problem sharing that information.
Yeah. And then, you know, you can open it up to do DSCR all over the place. And then, and they're faster, easier loans than you would ever believe.
Absolutely.
Right? Like no income docs.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the credit, you know, the collateral, so the property itself, and then assets, if it's a purchase, if it's a cash out, it's really just credit and the property. I mean, it's
how easy is that, right?
Yeah,
it's great. So so that's your favorite, those are your favorite loan programs. You know, we're not saving the whales, we're not, you know, curing cancer, but you know, there's got to be some fulfillment in what you're doing. Like what do you find kind of is fulfilling about this?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like what I was talking earlier, being that like rescuer, this saver of the file.
Sure.
The, you know, the go-to guy when things fall out of traditional financing. But I really like the borrower level stories where you're working with like a first-time home buyer and you can see them, like you have access to some pretty personal information. You know, you're seeing their bank statements, you can see them starting up their company, this, like, you know, the expenses that they have, and you really get invested in these files. You know these, without having ever met these people, you really get to know them. And also through talking with the broker, you know, or the originator, you always kind of get some little bits and pieces there too. But I think that is, it's really fulfilling to know that you know made someone, like everybody says, oh, that they're buying their dream home or whatever.
Sure.
Like, but it really is like that they have worked their whole life you know, to save up the money to do this transaction, and here you are. Like,
and maybe the banks told them no, maybe like, you know, like Chase or Wells is like, sorry, you don't qualify. And you're like, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're self-employed, and you're like, I know I can, I've been paying this rent, this big rent payment every month, I know I can afford it. Like, why are you telling me no?
Yeah.
I got the cash to put down. Like, why, you know, so that I could see where that would totally feel good. I mean, and granted, you're not talking to the borrower, but you could probably feel that energy when the broker gets, you know, get approved. And then, you know, you're excited together as a team, kind of a team for that borrower, you know?
And like 9 times out of 10, they're either related to the originator, they are a friend of a friend, they're a friend of the originator, or you know, like a lot of times these are personal files. I'll just share one quick story.
Sure.
I had an originator who, it was like her cousin, and it was a purchase transaction, and something in the appraisal report was a little off about the water quality. So we said that they had to have like a reverse osmosis machine, like professionally installed, in order to have like safe drinking water. And so I
Detroit or something.
No. It was up in like Riverside. It just happened to be, they were like on their own
weird appraisal comment.
So weird. Yeah.
Toxic, like, water.
Obviously had never seen it.
Right.
And I don't think it was toxic. It was just like, you know,
undrinkable,
whatever levels were too high. And so, we're about to CTC and we have to get this thing. We, you know, just found out about it. And she's like going to Home Depot and picking up the equipment, and anyway, we got the deal done, but it was just like such a, like, we saved the day.
Yeah.
You know, she was working with me, understood the predicament that we were in, and it, you know, it was like her cousin. It was like, that's like, it doesn't get much,
she
more
was
personal
stoked, yeah,
than that we could, you know, deliver, even with like an adverse, you know,
right,
situation like that. But
so you were saying earlier about you get transferred appraisals sometimes.
Oh yeah.
A lot, probably.
Yeah.
What is it that Fun Loans does that you know about that other lenders don't, that like really kind of helps you save the day? Like what product?
What? So, I mean, I get a lot of transferred appraisals and kind of fallout loans. Some of them are just like simple things. Like it's like an LTV that was cut from another lender. Some of them could be, you know, when they went to waive escrows, it cost them a half a point at this other lender. And for us, it's like, it's an eighth in fee. Like not that big of a deal.
Yeah, so that good rate that they had just no longer is good.
So it can be stuff like that. It can also be like, had a gentleman that was, in the cannabis industry, and it was a larger, production type company. You know, he had filed everything on his federal taxes and everything and went to a bigger bank, and they were like, we can't do this. In addition, like he had all these work trucks and they all like called their notes due, because they found out. And I don't know, it was like a weird set of events, and I get this file in front of me and we were able to do it. It was, it was just like, it was such a cool feeling knowing that, like, you know, the types of programs that we have allow for that type of wiggle room and able to get things done that other people can't.
So as like sitting in your chair as top AE and you've seen like what brokers are crushing it and what brokers are, you know, sort of not, and like what the good ones are doing, you know, the ones that are doing a lot of business.
Yeah.
Like what kind of advice could you give to someone's listening right now that could help them get more business?
Yeah, definitely. I think, from what I've seen, you know, and like the types of brokers and the originators that work with us, we see all different, from large nationwide companies to small one man band, like just single owner operator, like no process, nothing. And it seems like the smaller, companies that have a little more flexibility, tend to have higher volume and repeat business. Not to say that I work with a lot of larger companies, and we definitely have relationships, and especially over time, if they've brought files back to me, that we have a rhythm and everything. Sure. But those smaller companies that are very hands-on, they seem to do very well. And I would say that, like, as far as getting new business, I think that, you know, obviously working with your traditional referral partners is important, you know, your real estate agents or so you have like a networking group. But even just getting in the community, doing something community based, like there are organizations out there that you can get in a group of people, and it's, you know, picking up the trash at the beach and you guys meet up once a month, or it can be like my mother's in the nonprofit called Seroptimist. And she's an agent. And so she, you know, by osmosis, she was in that long before she was an agent too.
So just to connect with people.
Yeah. Her mom was in it. It was like a legacy thing that she just always felt was important to her. And just by being in that, she has, you know, people come to her. And I think that, you know, it can be, you know, at church, it can be at, you know, maybe you play pickup basketball. Like you just never know like what it may be.
Yeah.
And, I think that there's just like hidden gems out there that people, there's business out there. I think that the people that want to, and are in it for the long haul are the ones that are successful, not the fair weather, need it dropped in my lap, need the inbound phone call from the lead gen, you know, company that we pay for. Or
whatever.
Not saying that stuff doesn't work too. I do feel like there is value.
Yeah.
In that, but that's
I think one of my favorite quotes I've ever heard was marketing is like, if you're not marketing, it's like winking at a girl in the dark because you know what you're doing but no one else does.
Yeah.
Or they for sure don't know that you're winking at her. So like, you gotta just market, you gotta get out there, you gotta do, whether it's pick up basketball, whether it's church, whether it's joining a boating club. If you're a mortgage broker, a lot of you guys probably got boats because you crushed it in 21, but like, you know, like I think doing stuff like that where you're out there and you're making yourself known, you're telling people what you do, you're just getting the word out, because like, you gotta get the word out. Otherwise you're sitting in your, yeah, you know, just waiting for something to happen. That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hearing you on that. You really gotta try to let, and I think it's also just, if something's not working, change it up.
Yeah.
Do a little different, something a little different, you know, like if you're always going to visit someone on the same day and they're not there, go on a different day, right? Like,
yeah,
like I know you probably do that with, you know, when you call your brokers, like if you can't call them on a day that they, you know, or like, you know, Johnny at XYZ Lending is never there on Monday morning because he's got to pick up basketball game or whatever he's, yeah, doing. So you're going to call him on Tuesday at, you know, at the same time, or you're going to call him in the afternoon or whatever, yeah, right? You got to change it up.
Yeah. Joe Post calls every Wednesday. Don't call him on a Wednesday afternoon. He's not going to pick up.
He's probably golfing with his realtors or golfing with like referral partners, you hope, right?
Yeah.
That's how he gets business, I'm sure. So you have any other tips like to get brokers more biz that you've heard?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I this may be super obvious, but when you close a very particular loan or very difficult loan, that kind of spreads throughout the community too. Like, mm-hmm, you always, like when you hear about a good movie or something like that.
Oh yeah. People talk. Right? Yeah.
People are talking. So you, I think I've told you this story before, but it was either P&L or bank statement loan for one business partner. And then his other business partner was like, wait, hey, how'd you do that? I like got declined, yeah, at Chase or whatever, bank it was. And we did his, and then there was like, you know, some other friends of theirs, I think they owned like a car dealership or something like that. And so
I love that idea. Like when you told me that, I think it was a couple years ago, a year ago, I was like, my gosh, if I was a broker and I closed a non QM bank statement deal for someone,
you knew that they're 50%.
Well, yeah, you definitely know, because, yeah, you have to ask. But I mean, you can even just ask them, like, hey, does your, you know, you're talking to your borrower, do you have a business partner? Yeah. Do they own a house? You know, same thing. It's like you could turn one deal into two just like that. And if, yeah, they have three partners, boom, you got more deals. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Asking the questions, that yeah, being curious. Like I do it myself with brokers. Like if I hit someone up that I haven't talked to in a while or something, hey, you know, what's going on? I haven't worked with you in a while. Like, oh no, you know, I've been doing, you know, a lot more agency, and I've been, you know, kicking those kind of to the side. Like, well, who are you kicking them to? Like, what do you mean you're kicking them to the side? Or like, what's wrong with them? And then like, well, we got this new guy that started at the company and he's just kind of handling all those like harder deals. Like, perfect. What's that guy's name?
What's his number right now? I'm calling him.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's a good way to help brokers get more business. But like, what's some stuff that they can do when they're submitting a non-QM loan that will like save them a headache, or, you know, tips on just how to get your non-QM deals done smoother?
Yeah, I think, I mean, other AEs may kill me for saying this, but I think lean on your AE.
Yeah.
Like, definitely ask a lot of questions. These are manual underwrites. They're not your typical AUS or DU,
sure,
or LP type files where it's just kind of in and out, you know, super easy. There are checklists up front. And we publish everything. It's not like we have some hidden behind the curtain process. It's like,
yep,
here's our checklist. This is what's needed to get it in. And if you have, you know, trouble, like translating that either to your processor or the loan officer assistant, or if you're having someone else do it, like put the two of us in touch.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And, so I think that that's the upfront, almost like a pre-underwrite with your AE. Like if I know something ahead of time and I work it out with the loan officer, the condition set is half,
yep,
of what it would be if they just threw it in and let the underwriter kind of decipher through. But as you know, we write cover letters for all of our files.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of that's our way of, as an AE, kind of pre-flighting it. But if you're an originator, you're going to know more about that file before it lands even to an AE. So,
right,
tell them that stuff up front. And I just recently had this happen where we had an issue on a file, and it would have been 10 times more easy if they would have just told me the thing that they were worried about,
yep,
up front. Let me know what the dirt is.
Instead we of may like have hoping a, you don't ever see it.
Yeah. And like,
we're going to see it. We're going to know.
Yeah. And just, you know, it's like, it almost feels like lying by omission. Like, you're like, that didn't feel good.
Yeah.
Like, don't just omit this, like, massive detail. Or
why didn't you tell me the guy's pool is empty and he doesn't have any water in there? And it's, did I have to really find out by the appraiser now? Yeah. Now we got to deal with this. And it's going to take longer than that, but it's my fault. Like, this is so many times, you know, it's like that kind of stuff happens. It could have been avoided.
I do find, though, that level of trust is gained over time. So, like, that happens more frequently on those first time submissions or those, like, but you know, the Alex G's of the world that have worked with me a million times, he's gonna call me and just say, hey man, this fell out over here, this is what's going on with it,
it's good, like,
can we do it? And we'd rather know right then than be 3 weeks in, get that appraisal and have that happen.
Absolutely.
So it's really kind of a trust thing, knowing that I'm not going to go tattle on you. Like, I'm not going to go kill your file.
It's kind of like an attorney-client privilege thing.
Yeah, almost. Kind of. I mean, I don't want to say, you know, like, bring us your shady files at the same time. No. But if there is a concern on the file, like, it's so much better to know up front than to, like, have everybody on pins and needles asking in the background in ops, you know?
Yeah. I mean, because we want to make deals work. We want to make... We got it. We want it. It's like a puzzle. We want to put it together.
Yeah.
But if you're leaving out pieces, it's just never going to work. Yeah. You gotta, and we're not people that can just imagine, you know, what your problems are. We gotta tell us.
Yeah. It's like playing poker and not being able to see your hand.
Yeah.
Like, I just need to know, you know, are we putting together a full house here? Three of a kind.
There's another referral source right there. Get a poker game started.
Yeah.
You know, with other people that are in, like, network, like with different network kind of group, right? Like, someone who's an attorney, someone who's a, you know, accountant, right? Yeah. They all like poker. Some of them. Yeah. You can always find someone that likes poker.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Any missed opportunities? I know we talked about, like, when a broker is only licensed in one state, they can, you know, do DSCR in multiple states. Like, what other missed opportunities do you think?
Yeah, I think that's huge. Like you were saying, I think that a missed opportunity is also just not being comfortable with non-QM. Like, sometimes non-QM to people is, like, a bad word, or, like, they don't quite understand this sector of it. And I think that just being open to alt doc income, you know, some people equate non-QM to subprime. It's like, no, we still have rules, we still have ATR to improve. We have all of these measures
on average. The FICO is like 720.
It's
on average, like,
yeah. And, like, the average LTV is what, like 70%, 65 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do the higher leverage, don't get me wrong, but a lot of times these are great borrowers.
Like, I'm still yet, and I granted I'm not doing loans, but, like, even being on the credit committee, I don't see FICOs below 660. I mean, I barely ever, like, I know it exists. I know there's people that with crappy credit.
Yeah.
And in note, not always, you know, crappy credit is their fault. Like, right? Like, something's bad time. Sometimes bad things happen to good people and they get, you know, crappy credit. But I mean, these days, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because of Credit Karma apps and, like, people are more aware of their credit. They're more conscious about it. So, like, I don't know. Like, what do you ever come across the credit that's below?
I mean,
what's the worst credit score you've seen since you got here?
Well, I mean, pre-COVID, I saw some, like, in the five. Like, people would bring me scenarios, like, in the
fives, yeah.
And, like, yeah, we can't do any of that. I think pre-COVID we were 600 was our, like, absolute lowest. Yeah. And usually you're dealing with some sort of BK or mortgage late. So there's something massively going on if you're down in that range. In a post-COVID world, we're like, 660 and up usually. And and if there's someone kind of, you know, on the fringe, there's you know how they
there's have those tools, like, now to get people's scores
like,
up.
What if simulators and you can, like, pay off some balances or, like,
challenge it or
so that's definitely,
that's good. So you're a somm, and I probably messed the way that sommelier, right?
Like, sommelier.
Sommelier. which is awesome because it takes time to become that. And I know there's certain levels, and you know the highest one is like impossible to do. You have to smell and be able to tell what, you know, year the earth was turning, and you know, it's like what breeze was blowing by. Like I know you're not that high up, but being a psalm, I like to say, it definitely gives you, you have to focus, pay attention. You have to really like care about things.
Yeah.
So do you think that's translated into your, you know, kind of being an AE?
100%.
Kind of talk to us about that a little bit.
Okay. So for those of you that don't know,
Sommelier,
it's through the Court of Masters, or Court of Master Sommeliers. It's different than Master of Wine. And there are four levels. So intro, certified, advanced, and master. So I'm an intro. So there, as the levels increase, it's like exponential. And right. Like you were saying, master level four is like insane. We're talking like if you got all of the sports giants, like the best of the best, like, you know, you're looking at, I think like less than 400. It might even be like 400 or 500 or something
in the world. Yeah. Yeah. And they all work at like the highest end restaurant, Michelin star or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they're repping Krug or, you know, someone like very prestigious.
Yeah. They have like insurance on their tongue.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as how it translates for me, there's a few kind of things. Like, so when you do deductive tasting, you really have to like tune in to like each individual characteristic of tasting a glass of wine and telling what it's not. And so going back to like the matrix and the guidelines and stuff like that of what we do, it kind of rings the same bell. It's like you know that this can't go here, but what about here? And then, you know what I mean? It's like there's always this what do they call those diagrams where it's like a path, you know what I mean? Like they have like
the choose your own adventure.
Kind of like there's a word for it, but anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so you know you can't do this, so we need to do this, or we need to pay off this credit card to get the DTI down, because when we get the DTI down, we get a better rate, and then that further improves our DTI. So that
reasoning level, kind of
yeah, it's like deductive reasoning, but tasting. Right. So you can look at something
like you're swirling around, you know, that this color has got to be from, you know, it's education, but also with kind of like what, like just learning all the, it's like knowing your guidelines, it's like knowing your matrices, and
right,
and then you're looking at a problem with these this wide array of knowledge that you can kind of figure out how to deduce that down to what it is you need to do.
Is this ruby, is it brick, is this magenta? Like those are three different indicators for three different things.
And then is there an earthy smell?
Yeah.
Is
it really subdued? Is that old world? Is that, you know, does it really hit you in the face when you smell it? That's new world. So you can, there's a lot of parallels, I feel like. And then in addition, the ability when you're going out and you're wining and dining, or you're, you know, hanging out, you know, whether you're on a work trip at a trade show, or you're just taking a broker out for a nice meal, that comes in handy. I mean, it matters. It's cool to be able to
reject a wine. You're like, it's not good enough.
No, I would.
This is corked. Not do that.
Well, if it was corked, I'd send it back for sure.
Right. Or slightly off. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's totally going off here topic. We're not really off topic, but there was a whole, I think it was a fraud series about someone who was taking labels of like wines that were like $3,000 and pouring in other wine. And so I wonder how many psalms he tricked, because he was going on for a while, right?
Like
this guy had a racket going where he was selling, I think at auction, these crazy wines that weren't the real deal.
Yeah.
And people would taste it and they'd be like, oh, this is so good. I smell the old world of the, you know, that's pretty interesting. That was interesting.
I mean, he had to have gotten it pretty close, or he had some sort of, I mean, he obviously was fooling some
pretty important people that probably were really embarrassed at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, any shout outs, you know, to someone who's helped you along the way? Because you can't, not everyone can be where they are without having a little help.
Yeah, I would say shout out to my wife for always supporting me, and like allowing me to, you know, take those calls and do the things that are required to be a number one AE and cool. high performer. So that's huge. And yes, then
shout out to her for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And then I would say, shout out to Dave for seeing something. He's our chief learning officer, for seeing something in me that, I didn't quite know. I had been in sales and, insurance, and it was a different type of sales, but I didn't know that I possessed that level of skill, and he saw it.
That's cool.
And so shout out to Dave.
And shout out to The Secret.
Shout out to The Secret for sure.
Well, cool. I appreciate you coming on, man. It's been great.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening. Please, again, like, share, subscribe, because we wouldn't be here without you. We're trying to bring content, trying to bring value to your daily life and to your mortgage business. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you on the next one. Boom.
Boom.
The Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.